A rare note at the top of this episode. If you like our podcast, great. Please go to iTunes and review us so more great people like you can enjoy these stories from Ann Arbor's past and not so distant past. Reviews matter, even if you think we're terrible. And if you like us, maybe you'll love the Ann Arbor Stories experience in person. Ann Arbor Stories will be performing a live tale at Nerd Night Ann Arbor on Thursday, February 16th at 7 p.m. at Live. That's at 102 South 1st Street. Doors open at 6:30. It's free, and we're telling our first live Ann Arbor story alongside two other nerdy presentations from two other nerdy people talking about things that I'm sure you'll enjoy. Check our Twitter account at Ann Arbor Stories or follow our brand new Instagram account of the same name, Ann Arbor Stories, for more details. Thanks again for supporting this podcast and the Ann Arbor District Library Old News Archive team. Now, on to the story. This is Ann Arbor Stories. I'm Rich Ray. It was a time of spirits and specters and the people who could contact them, channel them. Like the Fox Sisters of Hydesville, New York, who in 1848 communicated with the spirit world through a series of knocks. They developed a code with these ghosts, knocks on the floor to represent yes and no, knocks that sounded like they came from the walls and ceiling, spelling letters of the alphabet to answer riddles of the universe or confirm what color dress one of the girls was wearing. The girls would sit at a table and ask the spirits questions, and the knocks from the other side would answer. They performed their soon-to-be-famous spiritualism act in Rochester in front of a paying audience in November 1849, forever known as the Rochester Rappings. The spirits rapped below the stage, they blew in people's ears, they passed through the bodies of some of those in attendance, giving them a frightful chill. People wanted to believe. It was hard not to. The performance was the first known demonstration of spiritualism in front of a live, paying audience. But it would be far from the last. A few years later, in Pittsfield Township, a young boy named Daniel B. Kellogg stood in the district schoolhouse one cold night. A traveling mesmerist of some note had scheduled to stop, and his presence and tales like those of the Rochester Rappings made it an irresistible draw for the townsfolk. The mesmerist set up shop for several nights, displaying his wondrous experiments for a reasonable admission price. Young Kellogg wasn't impressed with how the mesmerist spoke, which he called third-rate oratory, but the show itself was quite something else. The man lit a candle and performed a series of curious motions in front of the flame. Kellogg was entranced. He slipped into a fog. Young Kellogg assumed everyone else in attendance was experiencing the same thing, eyelids drooping, a numbness and prickling sensation in his body, but he was the only one. The mesmerist singled him out and, playing to the crowd, magically controlled parts of Kellogg's body. He made Kellogg stand erect, made him walk against his will, fed him tobacco, and told him it was candy. Kellogg was fully aware of what was going on, but powerless to stop it. Kellogg chewed the tobacco, knowing full well what he had in his lip was tobacco, but boy did it taste like candy. Kellogg assisted in every performance during the mesmerist's run, learning what he could until the man packed up and moved on. Kellogg came to the realization that he was the perfect channel between the real world and the spirit realm. He learned how to harness the power and force himself into the state the mesmerist placed him in. Kellogg formed magic circles to channel the same rappings like the ones in Rochester. He channeled spirits who took over his body to write messages from the afterlife using ink and paper. Onlookers watched as Kellogg sat still as parlor furniture danced around him as if possessed. People flocked from all over Pittsfield Township to witness these amazing occurrences, as word spread throughout the county. Never a remarkable boy, Kellogg quickly gained popularity as a major spiritualist. He claimed to be the perfect vessel for these powers. He'd clear his mind, focus only on friendship and love, letting these positive emotions wash over him. Surrounding objects would start to glow, and spirits would whisper to him. He claimed to be able to inspect with perfect ease the internal organization of everyone in the room. Each of their organs gave off a different light, and Kellogg began to notice differences in people's hearts, brains, spleens, kidneys. He could observe health and sickness. Kellogg never studied medicine, but had an innate gift for diagnosing disease and prescribing the appropriate remedy at the time. Bloodletting and purging, that's giving patients certain oils to make them throw up, were still common remedies at the time, along with opiate injections and water cures. Kellogg's brand of psychic diagnosis and healing offered hope and, because he was actually pretty good at it, had positive results. It's not as crazy as it sounds. Medicine in the 1850s was still pretty inexact. This is an era before hand washing, when surgery was extremely risky and often a last resort. Permit me a quick digression. It's 1799, and former President George Washington lies in his bedchamber, cold, short of breath, and clutching his chest. He had a cough, runny nose, and sore throat the day before after spending most of it riding on horseback in the snow and sleet. He ate dinner that night in his soaking wet clothes. The first doctor removed 12 to 14 ounces of the president's blood, nearly a pint. Good old bloodletting. The doctor then gave him a tonic of molasses, butter, and vinegar. They poured a solution down his throat to cause blisters, the idea being that blisters would pull the evil from the president's body and expel it outward. Then they took another 18 more ounces of blood, more than a pint. The human body contains about 10 pints of blood. Washington was down to 8. His situation, shockingly, didn't improve, so doctors took another 32 ounces of blood, now 40% of the president's blood, and followed with a round of purging to make Washington vomit. Later that night, they applied compounds to his feet, arms, and legs to raise more blisters, and a few hours later, the president uttered his final words and died. This was the state of medical care that George frickin' Washington received. Not some commoner, not some 32-year-old farmer from Ann Arbor. Granted, that was 50 years before Daniel B. Kellogg began practicing his unique brand of medicine, but these treatments and beliefs were still in common practice. Could Kellogg really have been much worse than the accredited professionals at the time? People came from all over Pittsfield Township to visit Kellogg with their physical and mental ailments. Kellogg would slip into a trance, explore their glowing bodies, and prescribe cures based on what he saw. They called him the clairvoyant physician, accessing the spirit world to offer help. As his practice grew, Kellogg set up shop in the Anson Brown Building in Lower Town, the oldest remaining commercial building in Ann Arbor, at 1001 Broadway Street, where the St. Vincent de Paul thrift store is today. Kellogg advertised in periodicals across the country, offering to see patients directly or diagnose them via mail. For these remote diagnoses, Kellogg was assisted by two spirit guides named Wallapaka and Owasso, the disembodied ghosts of Native American medicine men who would speak to him in native tongues he somehow understood. One of Kellogg's ads in the Ann Arbor Directory read, "Dr. D.B. Kellogg examines and treats diseases on principles. Special attention given to chronic complaints. Full name, age, and place of residence required to ensure a correct examination. Examinations personally or by letter. 50 cents each. Office hours 9 a.m. to 12 and from 1 to 4 p.m. Taking the patient's information and fee, Kellogg dispatched Wallapaka or Owasso to remotely perform the examination and report back. Then Kellogg prescribed one of his special family remedies. One correspondence with a patient reads, "I find you improved and gradually getting better, and I am confident I can cure you, and today send you a good compound and one which will help you. Still, you will need more when it is employed. Let me hear again from you when it is necessary." Kellogg also saw patients in person in Ann Arbor. These office visits often endured the loud sound of a crying child in distress, emanating from the lower floors of the building both day and night. A small price to pay, I guess. Kellogg's fame spread, the successful clairvoyant physician with no formal medical training, curing the sick and afflicted. Patients streamed into his offices, filled his mailbox looking for help, filling his pockets and helping his practice thrive. It wasn't all friendship and love. Kellogg couldn't always turn his gift off. His home and office became hazard zones, where chairs and other objects flew across the room regularly. Loud knocks awoke him at night, strange tappings on his pillow. One time he had to abandon his office for an entire day because a flying hairbrush wouldn't stop attacking him. In a growing town with a popular university, he was also beset by skeptics and crazy people. Academics constantly challenged his powers, while on the other side of things, Kellogg was constantly declining requests to perform miracles, like raising the dead. Demand for his cures was so high that together with his brother Leverett B. Kellogg, they created a line of family medicines under the Kellogg name. Kellogg's Liver Invigorator, Kellogg's Lung Remedy, Kellogg's Magic Red Drops, and Kellogg's Family Cathartic Pills. They used mineral water from a well in front of Daniel's home, located near his office at 723 Moore Street. The well water was high in iron and sulfur, making it the perfect water cure for patients suffering from bad guts. Unfortunately for the Kelloggs, Daniel didn't enjoy success very long. He died in his home in 1876 at the age of 41, presumably of an inflammation of the bowels. His brother Leverett continued to sell their family cures, while Daniel's son Albert C. Kellogg continued to practice his father's profession. Those magic red drops continued to be sold throughout the 1800s as Albert practiced his family's brand of medicine, even after the Fox sisters from Hydesville, New York admitted that their famous Rochester wrappings were nothing but a hoax. Apples tied to strings tied to their feet. Coordinated cracking of foot and ankle bones. Accomplices in the crowd. A complete hoax. But nobody cared about the confession. Spiritualism thrived, as did the Kelloggs. Until Leverett died, then Albert II joined the spirit world, passing to the other side in 1893, and taking with him the clairvoyant Kellogg legacy. Ann Arbor Stories is presented by Rumblepack Media in partnership with the Ann Arbor District Library. This episode was written and read by me, Rich Reddy, with recording and sound production by Brian Peters. Special thanks to our good friend Katie Reeves for suggesting the topic of this episode. And thanks as always to the Ann Arbor District Library and their amazing archive staff who continue to do a fantastic job of providing us with research on all these tales. Please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Ann Arbor Stories or drop us a line at annarborstories@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.